whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
And now it's time for the Scores Bears post-game show, starring Score football expert and former NFL player Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app.
How's it feel, Chicago? Undefeated. Never lost. In 2025. So, I mean, a little caveat goes on the end of it, but you know what? It's factually accurate. It is true. The Bears are undefeated in the year of our Lord, 2025, and that lone victory for this year has come over them guys from Green Bay. They've defeated the Green Bay Packers 24-22. It was an imperfect game, and what a perfect way for the Bears season to end with another imperfect performance, but one in this case, on this very day, that ends in victory. Haven't seen it in 10 games. Haven't seen it in 11 times against the Green Bay Packers. Bears finally get one done. What a way to go out on the regular season, because it wasn't a performance by the Bears that felt drastically different from what we'd seen for the majority of the season. It wasn't a game from the Bears that felt resoundingly better than what we've seen in the midst of that 10-game skid that they were on. But in the end, when there was an opportunity late, and there have been a series of opportunities late in game for the Bears to find a way to win, that they continued to find ways, by hook or by crook, they have continued to find ways to lose games, snatching defeat from the jaws, from the clutches, from the cold, bare hands of victory. They have found defeat after defeat. But not today. Not this day. Not at Lambeau. Bears take down the Pack by 2 points, 24-22. I'm going to begin with the positive elements here. One of the most positive elements in the years that I've been doing the post show, a couple of things that excite me about tonight's show. Because the very first, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the very first time that I did a season closing post show was back in 2018 after the double doink. That double doink game, Bears are facing the Eagles, look like they're driving in position to win the game. Here comes old Cody Parkey, division championship year, and a reliable kicker, certainly an imperfect kicker, but in some ways similar to Cairo Santos, certainly not as consistent as Cairo's been in his years as a member of the Chicago Bears here. But a guy who had been largely a reliable kicker, Bears drive him, the offense drives him into field goal range, and he double doinks what would have been a playoff game-winning field goal. I came on this very station in post coverage with my guy Nick Shepkowski, and before we hit the air, because there was such disappointment and we knew the city was just feeling despondent about what we had all just witnessed. So I said, Shep, before I come into the station, I'm just going to go find something to kind of, you know, help my soul feel a little bit better after what we just saw. So I stopped across the street at a Five Guys. And I went and grabbed the sloppiest double cheeseburger that I could find. And that's saying something at Five Guys, because they got some greasy, sloppy burgers in there, but they taste good. So I stopped at Five Guys, got myself something, got Shep something. And so while we were doing post coverage that night after the Bears season came to an end in 2018, then I decided that that was going to become kind of my annual ritual. Because things haven't necessarily been looking up in those six seasons since then. There's a lot of hope and a lot of promise, but the Bears seasons have unfortunately ended in disappointment, and the vast majority of those years, not even in postseason disappointment, just in regular season disappointment at the end of disappointing years. And in a lot of ways, in the majority of the ways that this season can be measured, a great disappointment, a big disappointment. But I did find my local Five Guys, find myself a greasy double cheeseburger. I have not inhaled it yet, but at various points throughout the show, I'm certainly going to make that happen. So feel free to check out my socials if you do want a look at what this cardiac arrest waiting to happen. If you want to take a gander at what it's looking like, feel free to check out my socials at Big Ant Heron. So that's one thing that I feel good about in somewhat of a unique manner versus the majority of the post-post shows that I do here. Another thing that has me feeling very positive is that we're going to make a little post-post show history. I don't normally have guests on the post-post show, but we're making a very special exception tonight because out in Green Bay, my guy Mark Grote, he has been on the Bears beat for us here at The Score throughout the year. We're going to have Grotes actually with me in just a little while here to get his thoughts, to get his observations from right there on the scene. He's been there at Lambeau. Pretty sure I saw him earlier on social with a grabber bobblehead, the grabber head, just jingling around before the game against the Packers early today. So I'm going to talk to Grotes a little bit later in the show. So those are two things that have me very excited about the show tonight. Certainly going to get out to the phone lines with you as well at 312-644-6767. That's the opportunity you can take to hit me up here. Got my guy Tyler Butterball on the ones and twos. We are taking you up to Sunday night football coverage on The Score. And tonight's Sunday night action we got for you is a good one. It's a saucy one. With this very division on the line here, the NFC North up for grabs. A couple of 14-win squads, 14-2 versus 14-2. Got the Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings. Pre-game coverage will begin here on The Score at 6:30. So make sure after we finish up post-post coverage, you will be able to hear that game and listen to how the division title, the division championship in the best and the deepest division in football. And it's impressive for the other teams in the division to have played well enough for this to still obviously and overwhelmingly be the deepest and best division in the sport this season with how poorly the Bears have played since London. Bears finished the season at 5-12, and there are a number of aspects of their performance in this game today that stand out to me. Andre 3000, he would talk in the musical space about the perfect imperfections in life. And you see a good bit of that with Caleb, because he's obviously talented. He's obviously got not only the arm talent, the ability as a talented passer, not just a big guy with a strong arm or anything like that, but you see when he's delivering the football, especially when he's delivering it with confidence, you see some nuance to the way that Caleb can throw the football. When he's in rhythm, how deadly accurate he can be as well. For whatever reason, that tends to come out more. I mean, one of the biggest observations I have from Caleb's rookie season here is that in times of desperation, that seems to be what brings out the best in Caleb Williams. I think in a lot of ways, that's a very positive aspect of what we can take away from this year, because there have been so many fourth quarters where the Bears have been out of it, where they've seemed out of it, or where he's seemed out of rhythm, where the team hasn't been doing well, and they find a way to fight back into it. Today's game wasn't exactly like that, because so many other things, maybe not so many other, but enough other things went well for the Bears, including some poor performances, poor decision-making, poor execution from the Packers. So you had a number of aspects that had the Bears actually leading this game throughout. So this was a fourth quarter where Caleb had to handle the second half of this game and the fourth quarter of this game playing with a lead. Not a big lead, but actually playing from ahead. It's just not something he's gotten to do a lot of here as of late. And so Caleb in this Bears offense trying to figure out, how do we close this game out? How do we make plays, but try not to do things that are going to keep the opponent in the game? And that is a different balancing act throughout sort of the four-act play that an NFL game can be. And the, you know, the term momentum, that word gets thrown around a lot, but it does ebb and flow a lot throughout a game where it feels like a certain team has the upper hand and then the opponent makes a play, or the team who's got confidence and feels like they're rolling makes a fateful error or a blown assignment, has a lapse in judgment or focus, and that can turn the tide in a game, and then the other team senses this opportunity that's there and it can be seized. And that happens a lot. You know, it happens big in the NBA with big leads that get lost and teams make these furious comebacks. It's not usually big leads and big swings like that from a scoring perspective in the NFL, but certainly the team who's in control of the game, it's pretty apparent at various points, but that can ebb and flow throughout a game. Today's game, loved some of the individual responses that were there. It was a lot of fun, the fact that Cairo Santos had an opportunity to close the game, to seal the game with a 51-yard field goal, for that to be the game winner. Certainly after how the initial game, the earlier game against the Packers went, how that one ended with a field goal being blocked, and we saw back-to-back weeks of blocked field goals. And specifically to Cairo Santos, I don't know, I think he's a really good kicker. He doesn't, you know, his leg strength, the power of his leg, I think by modern standards is average. In the not too distant past, I feel like he would have had above average leg strength. Now, he's really dependable from upwards of 50 yards and even into the low 50s. Once you start, you know, going beyond that into the mid 50s, yeah, the trajectory is going to change a lot. And you're not even going to have him attempt anything upper 50s or 60 and beyond. That's not in his bag. But like 50 and below, he's automatic. I feel like it's taken for granted a little bit because so much of this season has been so disappointing and so many different games have had these climactic moments that went horribly wrong for the Bears. I feel like some of the what's turned into a bit of anti-Cairo sentiment, I do feel like people have gotten swept up in that a little bit. But I think Cairo Santos is a really good kicker. And I don't know, maybe my standards just are too low for place kickers or something like that. But everybody's really upset about the low trajectory and field goals getting blocked. And hey, man, somebody's got to shore up the field goal protection. Richard Hightower's got to get some things figured out. And yes, Cairo, it'd be great if his trajectory were different once you started getting into the 50-yard plus range. But man, we've seen the Bears cycling through some kickers here since Robbie Gould. And there's been no kicker that the Bears have had since Robbie Gould that have been nearly as good as Cairo Santos. So I'm glad he had that moment to close out the game today. I'm sure that was nice for him. And, you know, I think if not for some of the other broader circumstances here, then that, in my opinion, would have been worthy of a game ball just for seeing, like, knowing how dependable he's been for the Bears. And, you know, those back-to-back blocked kicks that we saw in the midst of the season, you know, some blowback that was there. Not all of it about Cairo. Certainly Richard Hightower got a good amount of his own personal blowback as well, which was earned and understandable. So shout out to Cairo. I mentioned Richard Hightower, and as those field goals were being blocked and as big returns at times were being given up, you know, as a special teams coordinator, we were in a stretch where, you know, Richard Hightower was kind of one of the personal favorites here before people started getting fired for the way he would address things with the assembled media, how forthright he seemed to be about things. He'd go into detail and explaining things, and he's so pleasant in the way he would greet the media when he approaches the podium, and that one time a week he'd get that opportunity. He was a media darling. He was kind of one of the personal faves for a little while. And then, as things tend to happen, when his phase of the game started to falter. Now the tone is different. The organization, games are being lost and losing streak, you know, defeats are mounting, and you know, some of that harsh glare is starting to turn on Richard Hightower and the special teams. And so the tone was a little bit different for Richard Hightower and some of those opportunities. But he's matched up, matching wits today with one of the best in the business for Packers special teams. And coming out of that game today, advantage Bears. You know, Green Bay certainly made a couple of plays. Their kicker hitting a 55-yarder to take the lead in those conditions. Very impressive. But you had the, I guess I'll call it misdirection on the, you know, the fake return from DJ Moore, which honestly, I didn't even think DJ's performance was that great. You know, but what I loved about the way they executed is that Josh Blackwell is up looking like he's double teaming the Packers gunner. And so that essentially takes him out of the sideline of the punt coverage unit. And so that's a part of where DJ Moore doesn't even have to, he didn't have to give like a great Oscar-worthy performance. I was wanted to run jokes on the station here. I can be a little bit harsh with my critiques of actors. DJ's performance was fine. You know, he did look up into the air, but I've seen better, I guess is my point there. But it got the job done. The punt coverage team believes DJ Moore is getting ready to field it. In the end, the punt is on the complete opposite end of the field. Here comes Josh Blackwell. He fields it, and he never even needed to get into top gear. That's how badly they fooled the Green Bay Packers with that moment. Now Josh Blackwell, after he makes a clean grab, yeah, he's got a couple of blockers out in front. He had to kind of, you know, go against the grain, weave through a little bit, but they were completely outflanking the Packers with that. So a good call, an aggressive call at the right time. You would imagine that they knew from the particular hash mark it was on which direction Green Bay liked to kick it. And so here's DJ Moore. He can go back there. And the preferred returner, because we haven't seen DJ Moore returning any punts this season, the preferred returner, Josh Blackwell, gets to field it from the hash mark that they anticipate the ball going to. And then it ended up being a really easy touchdown for the Bears. So that was a nice moment for Richard Hightower. And then in the series of a few other moments in the game, special teams, nice job in coverage units, and a nice job as well, certainly on the game-winning 51-yarder from Cairo. So that was really good. I was happy for some of those individuals, because in a season like this, and you know, I was in a season with the Detroit Lions where we started 0-12 and then won two out of our last four games, and the final game was the final game in the history of the Pontiac Silverdome, you know, final NFL football game in the history of the Pontiac Silverdome. So we close out the Silverdome. They're getting ready to open up Ford Field the following year. It was a horrible season that we had in Detroit, but it was a really nice way to go out. And I do remember, you know, we're jogging off the field, we're high-fiving fans and everything else, and we defeat the Dallas Cowboys, and just the joy on the fans' faces in this lost season that we'd had in Detroit, but just reaching up and high-fiving people who just felt so great about watching us win that game in a two-win season. It was a nice moment to go into the offseason. It didn't catapult us into a bunch of success in 2002, but it is a lasting memory, just thinking about the passions of fans. And I know there are so many of you that are out there right now. I've seen you on social media. I see you on the text line right now. I'll get to some of you on the phone lines here as well, who feel the joy from finally defeating the Green Bay Packers. Before I get to my first time out and then come back with some callers, I do want to take this moment, but frankly, just before I forget, because I haven't really talked about Thomas Brown as a head coach hardly at all on this station. And I guess basically it's just because I have yet to be, I've not at all at any point been under the impression that he's going to be the Bears head coach moving forward. He is the head coach who's been managing these games, the interim head coach, since Matt Eberflus got fired. He got promoted to offensive coordinator, and so his management of the game from an offensive perspective and how it aids or abets, perhaps, the development of Caleb, that's been more my focus in how I've discussed Thomas Brown. But I do find him to be a very impressive individual. I mean, he's not going to be the Bears head coach, but I do at least want to take this moment because it does feel to me like we're going to get to a point sometime in the years to come here where I do believe that there's a good chance Thomas Brown will become a head coach somewhere at some point. I find him to be a really impressive individual. I don't really have the feeling that he's ready for it yet. But what he's experienced over the last couple of months here, I mean, frankly, throughout this full season, but most specifically over the last couple of months, as he's been ascending to different roles and new heights in his coaching career here with the Bears, I believe he's handled himself just in addressing things with the media and how he seems to handle things with the team. He's got a what seems to be a firm but fair demeanor about him, and that's kind of the coaching style that speaks to me, so I find appeal in that. And if at some point during the season here that I felt like, you know, Thomas Brown had impressed enough where, you know, he deserved to be given serious consideration to be the full-time head coach moving forward, then, you know, my perspective on that would have adjusted. But that just hadn't been the case. He hadn't impressed to that extent. There's a lot of explainable reasons for why this was not a great situation for somebody to take over this team and try to turn a corner and try to be uber impressive. And the Bears, under his interim leadership, really haven't been for the most part. But he individually, my impression is that Thomas Brown and partially my hope for Thomas Brown, because just like, you know, we spend a lot of time evaluating players, it's worthy of evaluating coaches as well and where they're at in their tenure as coaches, where they're at in their development as leaders and as, you know, schematic professionals, football teachers, all those things that kind of go into coaching. And I really think Thomas Brown is an impressive head coaching prospect. And I've been impressed with him this year and think there's some meat on the bone for him. Like, I hope he's going to get an opportunity to be an offensive coordinator for someone next season and get kind of a full season of a body of work in that role. And then from there, you know, have an opportunity to kind of keep progressing back to perhaps having a full-time head coaching opportunity. I believe there's every chance that's how things are going to develop for Thomas Brown here, because I do believe he's been impressive in the situation. I didn't really pay close attention to or evaluate what he was doing with Carolina last season. What I've seen him doing in running things in this interim fashion for the Bears here lately, though, I'm very impressed with how he carries himself. The Bears offense certainly showed growth in the time he was calling the plays versus what was happening with Shane Waldron. So we'll see. I mean, I'd be shocked if anything happened here in Chicago this cycle, or as a head coach happened elsewhere this cycle. But my hope for Thomas Brown is that, you know, folks observing how he's handled himself both as a play caller and as an interim head coach now, that this will lead to offensive coordinator somewhere and then the possibility of maybe becoming a full-time head coach down the road, because I do find him to be an impressive individual. Let me take my first time out here, come back, get to some phone calls at 312-644-6767. Want to make sure, though, that you tune in all day tomorrow for our Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Bosch Power Tools and Busey Bank. Gabe Ramirez will have full reaction to the game starting at midnight, followed by Mullion Hall at 5:30 a.m. And like I referenced, tonight, the Lions host the Vikings on Sunday Night Football with the number one seed in the NFC on the line. Pre-game coverage is coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:20 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. I'm Anthony Herron. Your phone calls on the way right here on the Post Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Caleb Williams, who's looking for his first career game-winning drive to end his first season. It'll come down to Cairo Santos from 51 yards. Good snap. Good hold. The kick on the way by Santos, and it is good! The Bears' losing streak comes to an end on the final play of the regular season.
It's a nice moment. Great feeling for Cairo. Great feeling for Richard Hightower. Finally, as an interim head coach, Thomas Brown gets his first dub. Players gave him the game ball afterwards. He was talking to the media after the game about how he was going to find somewhere in one of his man caves, somewhere at some point to put that into. Because, you know, when you're, especially as an assistant coach, but the life of a coach in general tends to be rather transient. And so Thomas Brown hadn't even been in Chicago a year yet, and he's seemingly likely on the way to some other opportunity, his next opportunity in the NFL, wherever that may take him. I'm Anthony Heron. This is the Post-Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our thanks to the NFL on Fox. I got Kevin Kugler on the call for that dramatic 51-yard kick, a game that it looked like the Bears were just doing their Bears thing, making it fun, making it kind of freaky late, and then they were going to find a way to lose it. But some great passes by Caleb at the end. Love the fact that there was another chance they took to connect with Rome Odunze in a big moment. A lot of growth that I think we can expect, that we certainly should expect from those two first-round picks, top 10 picks that the Bears have in closing out their rookie season. Well, let me get out to the phone lines at 312-644-6767. Mike is out in Wisconsin. I want to talk about what we witnessed today at Lambeau. What's happening, Mike?
Hey, how are you? Thank you for putting me on. I really appreciate it. I wanted to mention to you that once the game was over at Lambeau today, I turned on the Packers post-game coverage, radio coverage, and instead of talking about, well, you know, the Bears had a lousy season, they've had some misfortune, whatever, 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 but let's give the Bears credit for gutting out a victory on the road at Lambeau Field when they didn't really have anything to play for. Of course, the Packers had something to play for. They could have improved their playoff seed. But instead of congratulating the Packers, what congratulating the Bears, what the Packers announcers are commenting on as well, gee, that victory just cost the Bears a better draft position for next spring. And I'm thinking, now you tell me that the Bears were going to fold. That just shows how much the Bears had in them, even though they had a lousy season. I give them credit for going into Lambeau and winning that game. They played well enough to win. They should have won the game at Soldier Field earlier. But I'm just telling you how shallow these Packers people are. They're just so ridiculous. They never give the other team credit. And, you know, it's just ridiculous.
I appreciate that, Mike. That's a good call. I'm glad you observed that. I'm glad you informed us of how those Packers fans and how Packers radio was handling things post-game. You know what? Paper champions. No, I'm joking. But that is that tone. Yeah, I mean, you do, after all these years of success, it's essentially been, what, 30 years, basically, for Green Bay, just kind of expecting, confidently, being, you know, pretty sure they're going to hit the double-digit win mark during a regular season. They're going to get Pro Bowl caliber. You know, maybe you do, maybe you don't in a given season, but you know, Pro Bowl caliber quarterback play for the most part. 30 years of that, folks get rather spoiled. You know, I deal with a lot of Ohio State fans in one of my other gigs here. If you're just accustomed to, you just kind of turn into thinking it's your birthright to have a certain level of excellence from your ball club, then you know what? Giving the opponent credit doesn't always come easy to fans and to those who cover those individual teams. I hear exactly what you're saying, Mike. Let's get another caller in here before I get to Mark Grody in a bit. Rudy is also in Wisconsin on the phone line right now. What's happening, Rudy?
Hey, guys, what's going on? So my quick thing I got to tell you is yesterday I was at the hotel with the Bears players here in Austin, Wisconsin, and I'm a huge Bears fan. So I know all the players' names and faces. So yesterday I met a bunch of players, and I was just telling them, I'm like, guys, the last season was called the bang, you know? And I met DeAndre Swift, told him I'm running back for my high school team. I told him I appreciated him. And, yeah, dude, it was just fun meeting the players. And I just said, I was like, just go out there, just beat the Packers, man. Like, let's do it. Come on.
I like it, Rudy. And you know what? Every once in a while, who knows which player might have needed to hear that? Who knows which player that you might have interacted with at the hotel just took a little bit of extra joy? You know, maybe that put a little bit of extra pep in someone's step. The fact that they met Rudy, they met young Rudy at the hotel. Former running back who was out there, was there to see the Bears, to watch his team take on Green Bay. Lo and behold, they tried to mess it up. They almost did it. They almost did what they had done the previous 10 games, but they showed up. They fought hard. Credit to Eric Washington and that Bears defense for making big things happen. Credit to Caleb Williams for some big passes and decisive moments in that game. And again, credit to Cairo, making that thing happen. And also DJ Moore, yeah, I mean, career high in receptions this season. And for DJ Moore, ended up being a really physical season for DJ Moore because he was used as such an extension of a struggling run game. So you didn't see a whole lot of intermediate or deep balls going to DJ Moore. There was a lot of just long handoffs. And when the opposing secondary and linebacker core just get a sense for that, that, oh, they're going to throw basically, you know, sweeps. You know, that's essentially what a lot of these bubble screens and tunnel screens turn into when as a defense and certainly as an edge defender, when you get a sense that I come out of my stance and just run sideways and smack DJ Moore in the chops because they're not going to try to throw it over our head, then, yeah, you take a lot of hits as DJ Moore. So credit to him as well for continuing to fight and work hard. And that 32-yard catch and run he had that put the touchdown on the board in a drive that was basically just Caleb and DJ going to work. You know, third and five slant, bang, make it happen. Extending the play, you know, eluding a defender, DJ Moore in the flat, move the chains. And then the tunnel screen for a little touchdown. And that catch and run he had there, man, that was gorgeous. And that's the type of thing he's capable of. So credit to him for going out there fighting and making big things happen in the final game of the regular season. Sounds like Rudy enjoyed meeting the Bears players at the hotel. Hope there was nothing creepy about Rudy's interaction with the players. You never know. But he sounded rather gleeful and very joyous, and rightfully so. Even Tyler Butterball sounded pretty joyous, getting on the phone line. A little extra pep in the step of everybody when the Bears take down the Packers. We don't get to experience those things in these parts very often. Mark Grody hadn't gotten to experience that in quite a while either. Let me take a time out. See how things are feeling and sounding there on the scene in Green Bay. Mark Grody will join me next on The Score.
We're back with more of The Score's Bears post-game show with Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app.
Bears.
Yes, Bears it is. Anthony Herron here on the post show on The Score. Let's get out to the hotline. My guy Mark Grody awaits. I assume he is not evacuated Green Bay, Wisconsin as of yet, but it might be in process, in transit. You can find him on the X at Grody Sports. Groats, I'm so happy that you found your way back to social media, letting folks know what's happening. I saw you on there earlier today, and by the way, let me go ahead and click follow because I had not actually done that as of yet. So I'm following Grody Sports on the X, as all of you should be doing as well. What's happening, Groats? Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'm actually still at the Lambeau Field. I'm in one of the broadcast booths right now looking over an empty Lambeau Field, which is nice to do considering that the Bears actually won here. It's wild and almost feels surreal that in this season, one of the worst seasons in Bears history, that they would win this game at Lambeau Field in the final game of the season, and beating the Packers for the first time since 2018 when they clinched the NFC North. That's how long ago it was. Or, I mean, I guess, it, you know, 2018 doesn't feel that long ago, but in NFL years, that's a really long time ago. But yeah, man, I mean, this was an improbable win for the Bears coming into it, but it felt good for this team, and I think it even felt good for the media to some degree because, you know, lose 10 straight games and we start to run out of questions and the media, the players don't want to see us. We don't necessarily want to see them. And it's just this whole grind to the end. But it was, as you would expect, it was a jubilant locker room in the post game. You know, a lot of guys just seemed like they were floating. The music was blasting for the first time in a while, to the point where they did have to turn it down just a little bit to make it manageable for the conversations that we were trying to have in the locker room after the game. And this Bears 2-point win over the Packers.
Yeah, you only get so many of these opportunities, 17 regular season games in the NFL, just the volume of times you have to go out there, ply your trade, and step off the field either with a win or a loss is just drastically different in football than in any other sport. So any win, when the chance is there to enjoy it, then I'm glad the players and coaches were in there enjoying this one. It's been, you know, the season itself, there's been so much earned negativity here in recent months around the way this team has performed and folks losing jobs and things getting even worse from that point. The feeling of finality that's there in tonight's locker room were folks immediately moving on to sort of what the future holds, or were they taking a moment to truly kind of soak in the fact that they had finally taken down the Packers?
Yeah, it's funny. I think Cole Kmet in the locker room probably wrapped that up as well as anybody, because while he was very happy that they won the game, he was sort of, I would say, cautiously happy about it. Like, hey, we're going to celebrate this win. I'm sure everybody's really excited about it. But his message was, we got to get back to work soon. We can celebrate this. We can take a little break. And then we got to start to fix this thing. And a part of what Cole Kmet said too was, I mean, what this does do in the big picture for the core players is maybe to some degree it confirms what they think and what Cole Kmet was saying, that this team is a lot better than a 10-game losing streak, than the record they have to call it a season, that they're better than 5-12. Now, that's up for debate, and I'm sure there are people listening who disagree with that and could see a completely different team next year. But that was the attitude from him. And I had a good talk with DJ Moore after the game, and, you know, talking about some of the specifics, because there were a lot. Like, DJ Moore had quite the eventful game, from being the decoy on the return by Josh Blackwell to making the huge catch at the end to put the Bears in position for the field goal. Just a couple of big third down catches, and then the touchdown that was created by DJ Moore. It was classic DJ Moore. Caught a shallow pass, found his blockers, found space, and then found the end zone. But, you know, talking to DJ Moore, I asked him the question right at the very end of the presser that he was doing, or his gathering by his locker. So what does this do in the big picture? Because that is the question now. That is, as much as great as this is. And he said, we beat the Packers. And then he said, F them. So, you know, I do think, like, really, like, seriously, like, this does do something for the core, something that, you know, they've been hit over the head of so many times, even guys that haven't been around here very long and don't really even yet understand the Packers-Bears rivalry. They get that the Bears have been atrocious against, you know, obviously, a team that ain't going anywhere in this division. None of these teams are going anywhere. So I think in the big picture, there was a little bit of importance. You kind of got something out of the way. There's a relief factor that we could stop this nonsense and this silliness of the losing streaks and the not winning at Lambeau and picking the Bears, to, as I did at the beginning of the season, to go 0-2 against Green Bay. Although I did pick the Bears to win this game on the pregame show today. I'll stick to my preseason pick was that the Bears would go 0-2 against Green Bay. So I just think that they're, believe it or not, even in a big picture world for the Bears, this was really important to beat Green Bay at Lambeau Field against a really good Packers team.
If I'm not mistaken, I think you predicted before the season, those were the only two losses you expected the Bears to suffer, right? You had them at 15-2. Am I remembering that correctly?
Honestly, pretty close, not 15-2. I do think, look, I thought I was pretty ballsy because I said 11 wins while everybody else was staying in that safe place. Oh, 10 wins, 9 wins. I had the guts to come out and say 11 wins.
Brody was taking the over.
Was I horribly, nonsensically wrong? Yes. Yes, I was.
So were a lot of people.
So were a lot of people. I didn't. No, there's not one person listening right now that anticipated a 10-game losing streak in this season. There's nobody in here who predicted that, A, the offensive coordinator would be maybe have the worst tenure of any offensive coordinator Bears have ever had. And that suggests a lot of different bad offensive coordinators at the. I mean, think about that. That's a lot to take in. The guy that you put with Caleb Williams to start this new franchise quarterback was canned before the season. Well, in the middle of the season, for the first time in 100+ years, you fired the head coach in the middle of the season. So there were extenuating circumstances for sure. The play was bad individually by the players a lot for the season. I'm definitely not taking away responsibility for them, but this whole thing, the coaching staff, was it was a poorly hired, poorly managed coaching staff this year for sure. And I mean, you have to take all of that into consideration when you talk about the future of this team and what happened throughout this season. Bears were bad. The Bears were bad. And organizationally, they were bad this year as well.
The fact that the Bears won the game and the way they won the game, when it looked like they were going to lose the game in just yet another creative way, the manner the Bears, a variety of ways the Bears have found to lose games this season is mind-boggling. This looked like it was just going to be the latest and greatest one of those. And then after that 55-yarder with under 50 seconds to go, great acting job, frankly, by Caleb to pick up the horse collar call from the officials, a couple of big-time throws and catches, and then the Bears are in field goal range. So I was referencing a few of the folks who I just felt kind of happy for with the way the game ends. Felt good for Caleb that some of the fourth-quarter heroics that we've seen him pull off this season, that it didn't go unrequited this time. Felt really good for Cairo Santos and Richard Hightower especially. Just amongst kind of a few others within the cast of characters. But is there someone who stands out to you that, yeah, the fact that the Bears beat the Packers and the way that, oh, and Thomas Brown I've referenced as well, just kind of, I haven't necessarily focused in as much on discussing Thomas Brown and how he's operating as a head coach, because frankly, I haven't gotten to the point where I think it's a legitimate thing that he's going to get real consideration for it. So I focused on Thomas Brown, the play caller and the Caleb developer and those things. But I did take a few moments at the top of the show here just in talking about Thomas Brown as a head coaching prospect.
Yeah.
But the results of the game, what was there someone who kind of stands out to you like, man, I'm really glad that person got to experience that?
Yeah, well, let me talk about some of the points that you brought up. I like that you brought up Thomas Brown, because he was great in his post-game presser today. I mean, I asked him straight up, do you think you've earned your way back to this organization next year in some way, shape, or form, whether it's head coach or some other position? And, you know, he basically said, well, that's not up to me, and that is true. But then he went on to say, you know, he gave some of the credentials and what he felt he did for this team in terms of keeping it together and the team meetings and coaching this team. And he basically said, if that's not enough, then I don't know what to tell you. So I think Thomas Brown thinks he's done enough, and I don't know if it's realistic to consider that. You know, obviously, it all depends on who the head coach is, and maybe it's Thomas Brown, because I do think that he will at least get an interview the job. I don't know if they're going to take it seriously. But one thing he said, too, that really caught my ear, and I followed up on it with Caleb as well, was that Thomas Brown said that he had extremely intense conversations over the past days and weeks with Caleb Williams.
And I loved your follow-up. I was listening to that on television, and I absolutely loved the way you followed up on that question, as Thomas Brown was talking about it. It was really well done by you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I thought it needed some follow-up. And what I asked was, what specifically are you talking about, like these conversations? He made it very clear to me and the rest of the media that it's not a bad thing and that it's not like he's, you know, yelling at Caleb. But he did say that they were pretty one-sided, as in this was Thomas Brown telling it like it is, like he does, to a 22-year-old kid. And one of the lines that I really liked that he used, Thomas Brown, was, when it comes to making change, conflict is necessary.
Yes.
So these were not easy conversations, obviously. Thomas Brown sounds to me like he laid down the law to Caleb Williams. I don't know, we didn't get specifics from it, and I asked Caleb Williams about it as well, and he seemed to appreciate it. He, you know, essentially summarizing what Caleb said back to it, that he likes being challenged. When Caleb was asked this week what he wants in a head coach, and he used the word discipline. Caleb Williams has probably had it pretty easy in terms of the way he's been handled by, you know, in college and in high school and the media. You know, I mean, it sounds like he controlled that. He controlled the media. He controlled the narrative. He controlled public relations, media relations, and that's not the case at the NFL. So there's still a lot for Caleb Williams to, you know, he's got to work on becoming a professional in this offseason. And I don't know if that's what Thomas Brown talked to him about, but I thought that was incredibly important. To your point about how this looked like another, you know, sports in relation to sports, another tragic loss, what we would have been talking about is, you know, obviously you talked about the go-ahead field goal by Brandon McManus, but how about the fact that Keenan Allen threw an interception? I mean, could you imagine? Those are the things that we'd be talking about. Like, it's pretty amazing that in this game, in this venue, they overcame that kind of stuff. And I didn't get to talk to Keenan Allen.
Packers did him a few favors along the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes, they did. There's no doubt about it. So, I'm happy for Keenan. If we're asking you like players that I'm happy for,
yeah.
I was happy for Caleb. Caleb is unbelievable. That and another great point that somebody, I think it was Thomas Brown. Yeah, it was Thomas Brown talking about the fact that Caleb Williams is a great pressure player, but it's the rest of the stuff. You know, the final quarter, the final minutes.
Right.
He's great, but he needs to get it together in the rest of the game.
It's the moments of desperation. Like that's kind of the term I've come to. Caleb is at his best in moments of desperation, and he just needs to be so much better before it gets to those moments of desperation, whether it's a two-minute drive to close out the half. All right, Caleb, let's go hurry up. The clock's ticking. Time's running out. He's on fire. In those moments, yeah. Or the end of the game, we're down multiple scores in the fourth quarter. YOLO, Caleb, and then he's at his best. We got to get that drawn out of Caleb earlier in games.
Yes. I mean, he fumbled the first play of the game again. I mean, he recovered, obviously. Here's the quote. I just found it on my own Twitter because I put at Grody Sports, as you mentioned.
At Grody Sports.
We're trying to rebuild. At Mark Grody Sports, folks, in case you haven't heard, for some reason it got shut down at the end of last year. It's still there, but we're rebuilding with at Grody Sports, and I haven't tweeted nearly as much this year because I'm so deflated. But here is what Thomas Brown said in relation to Caleb Williams when the game is on the line. He says, this is Thomas Brown, quote, he's got a killer instinct. He's really probably better in those moments than he is in normal down and distances. There's a gap to be bridged when it comes to that. So exactly what you said, Anthony. And I think Thomas Brown, I mean, if he's not here next year, I hope whomever takes over, even if it's an offensive coordinator or the head coach, is as straight of a shooter as Thomas Brown is, because he does it right. He's a straight shooter without giving us everything, without selling guys out, but he's just real about it. And I think that that statement on Caleb Williams, if you want to analyze and evaluate Caleb's season, that quote from Thomas Brown should be in all the analysis before we go through all the minutiae of every throw that Caleb Williams made this year.
And the intriguing thing is, I know, you and I are obviously going to have plenty of opportunities to continue the postmortem on this Bears season in the days and weeks and months to come, but that's kind of who Caleb was in college too. So it doesn't mean he can't develop beyond that, but that's not a new thing to Caleb's resume. And so it will take a coach who's willing to be confrontational, willing in some ways to be dictatorial with Caleb to continue his development beyond the point he's at right now, because the talent is immense. But as I've been saying since before the Bears drafted him, the maturity of Caleb, the person off the field, has never concerned me. The maturity of Caleb's game is really my main concern. And you see some of those glimpses, those perfect imperfections of this young and remarkably talented quarterback. And we've been riding that wave with him all season. We're approaching the top of the hour, so I know you know what that means, Groats, that I can't just sit here doing this dance with you all night. Appreciate
whatever, man.
Your time.
Whatever, you and your damn clock. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but outstanding stuff, as always. And when's the next time I'm going to get to hear you on the station?
I will be on the station tomorrow at 4 o'clock. The Bears will have locker clean out tomorrow, so I'll definitely be on at 4. Who knows, maybe I'll be on earlier tomorrow, but Thomas Brown's going to speak tomorrow. Caleb Williams going to speak tomorrow. There's going to be open locker room, and then I presume Ryan Poles will talk on Tuesday, which probably portends well for his future with the organization. I'm not reporting anything yet. I know that there likely have been. I can't imagine that there wouldn't have been conversations with Ryan Poles over the last 2 weeks. They're not saving this all for one day. Trust me, those kinds of things. No matter what they say about focusing on the games and we got a game to play here, all the talks that we're having right now, I'd be shocked if those conversations weren't going on out at Halas Hall as well. So I'll be on the radio tomorrow for sure at 4 o'clock, and who knows, maybe before that too, with everything that will be going out at Halas Hall tomorrow. Also, going to be recording the Take the North podcast with Dan Weederer in a little bit, so check for that in a couple hours if you want the full wrap and the full Weederer too.
Yeah, he will talk football with you. All right, Groats, appreciate you, man.
See you, man. Bye.
That is Mark Grody of The Score and the Take the North podcast. I'm very late for a timeout. We'll come back at the top of the hour here, taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage with the NFC North on the line on The Score.
Now they've got to overcome first and 20. It's DJ Moore with a catch. He fumbles the football, and it's recovered by Green Bay. The answer to Daryl Johnston's question is a fumble, and the Packers take it over with 1:49 to go.
I didn't mean for it to happen, actually. Just the way this season has gone for him. I mean, so many games lost on the final play.
Catch, followed by a fumble, recovered by Green Bay. First down.
Carrington Valentine just jarred out with his helmet. Tooted up. Picked up by Bullard. And the Packers take it over with the turnover at the 43-yard line.
That's the way it sounded. Kevin Kugler, Daryl Moose Johnston on the call on Fox Sports, NFL on Fox. Appreciate them for the audio there. Appreciate that burger. I don't know if I've ever inhaled a bacon double cheeseburger that quickly before. Or, well, I guess they don't even call it a double, just a bacon cheeseburger. But it's got two patties, so it is legitimately and accurately a double. I'm Anthony Herron. This is the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score. Bears took down the Packers 24-22 at Lambeau Field. First time beating the Pack in 11 games, 11 matchups with the nemesis. I don't know, kind of shudder call him a rival until it becomes more of an evenly contested rivalry. But also, first victory after 10 consecutive defeats. So a really nice moment to do so on the road. A game that at least mattered to some extent to Green Bay, 6th seed versus 7th seed. But in the end, the gravity of the game didn't weigh heavily enough on Green Bay to put Jordan Love back into the game after he bangs up his throwing hand. So Malik Willis got to finish things out. Christian Watson, who was one of the Green Bay heroes in the previous game against Chicago, where the Bears defense was doing work against Green Bay the first time around. And then Watson, as Jalen Johnson loses his footing, Watson makes that remarkable diving grab that gets them into range to take the lead in the game. And then, of course, the blocked Cairo Santos, I believe it was a 46-yarder, that followed in the Bears' next offensive series. So that was just one of the crushing defeats that the Bears suffered on the season, but it was the previous game against the Packers, that one here at Soldier Field. So now to be able to make that happen on the road at Green Bay, really cool moment for a number of Bears. And for Caleb, specifically Caleb Williams, Bears rookie quarterback, he's not going to the playoffs like Bo Nix. He's not going to the playoffs like Jaden Daniels. He hasn't been able to lead the Bears to anything aside from the 5 wins they've had this regular season. But I do believe wholeheartedly there's plenty of promise shown by the Bears quarterback, Caleb Williams. And so part of the evaluation of how things will go here moving forward will be about how Caleb can refine his game, become more consistent with his precision to the extent that it can be the separating factor between some of these crushing defeats and being the key factor in wins. And, frankly, this is two Bears quarterbacks in a row here where you can make the case that all these losses that are mounting, while Caleb has a role in them, just like Justin Fields had a role in them, but there's some things just from an execution and decision-making perspective from teammates and coaches, we say, all right, well, I don't know, kind of feels like the QB did enough to put him in position to win, and then things didn't get across the finish line. But like that moment, the audio that Tyler Butterball on the ones and twos for me tonight, Tyler plays the audio of Kevin Kugler calling the play, like the action of the play itself. And, some of you, like we had a caller earlier who was out at Lambeau Field. So if there were some of you who were either listening to coverage on the radio or watching it on television, those of you watching it on television or who were at Lambeau, you might not have heard, but just before that moment, Moose Johnson actually even, he said, and some of you might have seen it on social media by now, Moose Johnson, right before that play, as the Bears have a lead in the fourth quarter and they're trying to run offense to sort of salt things away, he says, Bears fans at home are sitting here wondering, how the Bears going to mess this up? How the Bears going to blow it? And then seconds later, literally seconds later, you throw a relief pass, a quick now route out to DJ Moore. There's no one there to block for DJ Moore. It ends in a fumble, and Green Bay recovers the football basically in field goal range, certainly near field goal range, right where the recovery takes place. And so that type of moment where Caleb did end up getting an opportunity to respond, because when Green Bay kicks their 55-yard field goal, you know, it's 50-something seconds on the clock. By the time the Bears return a kick, there's just under 50 seconds on the clock, and Caleb does his thing. He, you know, as he mentioned earlier in the season, those are the types of moments where Thomas Brown on the headset tells him in his ear, all right, go be Superman. And we saw some of those moments from Caleb. We certainly saw a variety of those moments throughout the second half of the game. So those exceptional plays, the evading free rushers, the throwing from unique arm angles, the putting velocity on the ball in tight windows, and the pinpoint accuracy, a couple of those balls to DJ Moore in traffic or in tight windows. Like, it's one thing to hit the dig route on the decisive pass that put him in field goal range when there's no one there. Like, yeah, you certainly want to complete that, and it's a big-time throw and catch. But in execution, that one is easier than a couple of the passes that he completed to actually put them in that position throughout the second half of the game. But he's got that in him. He's got that in his bag. Where Caleb needs to develop, he's got to get to the point where the mundane is executed with more consistency. And he's been talking about it. He's talked about it internally, privately. He's talked about it publicly as well. Things like his rhythm, his timing, his footwork, his accuracy. And even during the week last week where he was defending his offensive line, the amount of sacks that Caleb has taken this season, I mean, it's frankly just a quarterback being honest and saying that a lot of the sacks are on him. It doesn't mean the Bears don't need to improve up front on the offensive line, but I do appreciate that Caleb is giving a realistic assessment of his role in this thing. I mean, between the variety of things that are credited with being a QB stat, like win-loss being a QB stat, I mean, I get it because the quarterback's the most important player on the field, but as far as the percentage of responsibility that a quarterback has for wins and losses, the quarterback himself, out of all the guys on the roster, all the guys that are playing the game, all the 11 guys that are on the field at a given time, the amount or percentage of responsibility the quarterback has for the win or the loss, that's a lower percentage than the percentage of responsibility the quarterback has for a sack or for the total number of sacks that he takes throughout a season. So as far as any stat that's not necessarily like win-loss is credited directly to a quarterback. You can look up every quarterback's win-loss record right now if you want to. But which thing is more directly tied to the quarterback's pre-snap recognition, pre-snap decision-making, post-snap mechanics, post-snap execution, post-snap decision-making, mobility at times? Which between the two things, if I'm comparing the quarterback's responsibility for win-loss versus the quarterback's responsibility for sacks, quarterback can take a lot more blame for sacks, in my mind, than just one win or lose, you know, victory or defeat, win or loss in an individual game. So the sack numbers, those need to come down, and Caleb seems to recognize that. So in evaluating where things go from here, that's certainly one thing that very much stands out to me. The consistency of being decisive, knowing exactly what he's looking at. And then once the football gets snapped, to operate on time. And operating on time has never been something that Caleb has been tasked with, perhaps even demanded of him on a consistent basis at previous stops in his development. And it's one thing to know it for Caleb. It's one thing for him to recognize the importance of it. And it's one thing for Caleb to be able to draw it up on the grease board. But it's one thing to put it on the grease board. It's a completely separate thing when the fan gets filthy. When all the nasty stuff starts hitting the fan in game, that's where you've got to keep your eggs unscrambled. You've got to keep your head about you, and all around you are losing theirs. And that's where the best in the business, the most consistent quarterbacks in the game, that's the aspect of what they can get done. That's where Caleb, I think, will have the potential for the most growth and what will aid him quite a bit. 312-644-6767. Get a couple more callers in here just discussing where we sit now. The Bears taking down the Green Bay Packers 24-22, getting that dub on the road at Lambeau Field. Gary is out in Mount Carroll. Gary's on the line right now. What's happening, Gary? You're on the Post Post Show. Oh, we lost Gary. All right. Well, let's go down to Florida then. I see Colin is down in Florida wanting to talk about what happened here with the Bears. What's up, Colin?
Hey, Ant, it's great talking to you, man. Growing up, we had season tickets to the Rush, so anybody with an arena football connection's got special.
I like it.
My heart. So I was going to call in when it looked like we were going to blow another one with this bit about we should be relegated to the CFL, you know, for three reasons. You know, they don't do it's only three downs, so our third down conversion's instantly better. They don't do tight ends, neither do we, and punting is really important in that league. So kangaroo leg would give it some great cups, and we've already taken hockey from them, so let's take their football too, you know. But that doesn't happen, so I came up with this, because I was supposed to go up there, but I got sick, so I had to stay down here. We should rename Lambeau Field to Caleb-O Field. Bear down.
Ah, all right. I noticed the way that Colin pronounced that as well. He pronounced it Lambeau Field as opposed to Lambeau. I certainly caught that. Colin, clever little nickname. And we'll see. You know, maybe if this is the tide-turning game, because Caleb has had the Bears in position to win both games against Green Bay. Both times, Caleb Williams was able to help lead this Bears offense into a position with a game-winning field goal try. One of them at home, one of them on the road. The one at home got blocked. The one today on the road, Cairo Santos drills it from 51 yards, and the Bears come out with the dub. So, you know, maybe this is the opening salvo in taking the Bears-Packers rivalry and never giving it back. That doesn't guarantee you anything for the North. Jared Goff going to be around for a minute. I don't know. I wouldn't be confident Sam Darnold's going anywhere anytime soon either, from the way he's played this season. And frankly, even if Sam Darnold is elsewhere next season, for Kevin O'Connell, he's got a talented young quarterback who's been able to sit back and watch throughout the season, and J.J. McCarthy. I'm not going to count Minnesota out, whether it's Darnold or McCarthy next year. But maybe in the least, it is taking the Bears-Packers rivalry and not giving it back. Who knows? A few other thoughts, though, just on the roster as a whole, because there are some decisions that will need to be made in the coming days here. The person who's going to lead this roster for the Bears, you know, I got a chance to talk to Jason Leisure on some pregame coverage on Fox 32, and you know, Jason covers this team as well as anyone in this city. I know some of the opinions he shared with us in talking about his preferences for the next Bears head coach. He's not alone in the idea that he's looking forward to the Bears getting an offensive head coach. And I get it. There's a lot of really talented offensive minds who deserve their opportunity to become a head coach, whether it's their first gig or whether they've gone through the ringer a little bit and maybe they come out the other side of it. So I'm not against the idea of the Bears getting an offensive coach. There's a lot of things from a continuity perspective that can be beneficial in having an offensive head coach, and he develops a young quarterback, and then they both just continue to coexist and do great things together moving forward. But I don't think you eliminate defensive coaches from this equation here, from this evaluation. I mean, one of the latest and greatest examples is DeMeco Ryans. When DeMeco Ryans got that job with the Houston Texans a couple off seasons ago, just to be clear, many of us just thought it was the Texans just checking a box, just thinking that Houston's just trying to do what they can to continue messing up their franchise and just kind of cycling through another coach and really kind of washing their hands of the situation for a while until they really found someone with some real stripes as a head coach. And lo and behold, DeMeco Ryans, former NFL linebacker, had a great career as a linebacker in college and in the NFL, then became a defensive coordinator for a couple of seasons in San Francisco, and then got this opportunity as a head coach. And now, through two seasons in Houston, for one thing, of course, they draft C.J. Stroud number 2 overall. So he's a remarkable talent as a quarterback. And yeah, he's taken a small step back in his sophomore season, his second year in the league. But 2 years with DeMeco Ryans, a first-time head coach, and 2 years for C.J. Stroud in the National Football League, they've now made the playoffs both years. And I would not put it past them to win a playoff game again this year, just like they did last year. That was a defensive head coach. And I was a guy who had at least been a coordinator before, but he's a former player who we don't necessarily see former excellent players turn into great head coaches. So DeMeco Ryans is unique in his resume and what he's become as a guy here early in his time as a head coach and the success he's having in Houston. But I'm sure there were a lot of Texans fans who had some similar thoughts, feelings, concerns. Hey, we're going to draft a quarterback. Let's get some quarterback in here, some former QB, so they can, you know, tutor our young quarterback. And then, you know, maybe they're going to be with him for the next decade because we're worried about if our quarterback is good, then somebody's going to get hired away. DeMeco Ryans just winning. Through 2 years, that's what he's doing in Houston. There's plenty of other possibilities and options here. Examples of coaches on both sides of the ball that have gotten that opportunity and have fallen on their face. We've seen the Bears in this circumstance where Matt Nagy was the head coach slash play caller. It's awful as a play caller. Matt Nagy was even worse as a play caller than he was as a head coach. Then you get Matt Eberflus coming in. He brings Luke Getsy with him. Getsy's an awful offensive coordinator. Turns out Eberflus doesn't get it done as a head coach either. You move on from Getsy, bring in Shane Waldron, and somehow Shane Waldron was worse than both Getsy and Nagy. How that's possible, I don't know, because neither Getsy or Nagy seemed very good at the job, and here comes Shane Waldron, and he's even worse than both of them. Barely lasted halfway through the season. The point being, regardless of what your job title was previously, I mean, that experience certainly matters. But regardless of which side of the ball the expertise of the next Bears head coach has been up to this point, Kevin Warren, Ryan Poles, George McCaskey, for however, whatever degree of depth he's involved in the process. Happy birthday, Virginia McCaskey, if she at 102 years old is involved in the process in some way. They need the right head coach. If it's a special teams coordinator like John Harbaugh was, if it's a defensive coordinator like DeMeco Ryans had been and a former player, or if it's some hot young offensive mind like Ben Johnson, whoever that individual is, if they get the impression that that individual can run the organization, can, yes, do things that will serve the development of Caleb Williams as a quarterback, but also run the organization top to bottom, the football portion of the operation, that's got to be on point. We've seen a wide variety of ways and reasons that things have fallen flat here with the last few Bears head coaches. And I frankly do still feel like there's a lot of potential in this roster, and there is the ability to add to it. I've talked to you about Montez Sweat, talked to you about Tremaine Edmonds. I frankly don't think either one of those guys is very different than they've been before now. Both are very talented football players who will, I believe, continue to make plays. Are their contracts a bit overvalued for their production? Perhaps. But the good thing is there is money to spend despite that. but you do have talented players who are here and the ability to add to it. Bolster the line of scrimmage, and if you get the right coach and coaches in place here, this is a team that can win. So I think this is a job for the Bears. It's going to be very enticing to a variety of the candidates who they end up interviewing. And so now that the regular season is over, they'll do their exit interviews tomorrow, and then there'll be a chance to hire the right coach, whichever side of the ball, whichever phase of the game that had been their focal point up until now. So if it's an offensive guy, I think that's great. That'll be a good thing for Caleb. But if it's not, I'm not going to count that individual out, because in the end, you just got to be a great head coach. The side of the ball thing doesn't matter that much. Tune in all day tomorrow for a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Bosch Power Tools and Busey Bank. Gabe Ramirez will have full reaction to the game starting at midnight, followed by Mullion Hall at 5:30 a.m. Tonight, the Lions host the Vikings on Sunday Night Football with the number one seed in the NFC on the line. Pregame coverage is coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:20 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. My thanks to Mark Grody, first guest in the history of the Post Post Show. My thanks to Tyler Butterball, only producer in the history of tonight. My congratulations to the Chicago Bears for finally getting off the schneid against the Packers. Appreciations and salutations to all of you for listening in as you have the entire season of the Post Post Show. Looking forward to bringing you more of it next year, and you'll hear me on The Score all throughout this time and that time as well. I'm Anthony Herron. This is the all-powerful Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.